Ibrahim, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
So the Qatar FIFA World Cup, the first in the Arab world, has elicited much negativity, especially from Western countries. We've seen protests from players, teams, citizens, even the BBC kind of boycotting broadcasts of certain parts of the opening. What is the background to all of this?
So there's two major factors informing, at least, you know, these negative perceptions. One is the fact that the process for the nominations, you know, was a very tainted process. Half of the members who voted to give the World Cups to Qatar and Russia at the same time, we all forget that both of the World Cups were given on the same day. Half of them have been expelled for corruption, expelled or suspended, including people like Sepp Blatter, Michel Platini. So, you know, that process was seen as problematic. And two is, you know, the questionable situation in Qatar. Now, one is, in relation to that, is the anti or the LGBTQI protest or the anti-LGBTIQ legislation in Qatar. But more significantly, I think, is the migrant crisis or the migration crisis in Qatar, where, you know, immigrants live in different conditions to, you know, that of the ordinary Qatari citizen. So, you know, these two broad issues are, you know, what are informing, you know, the protest. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, on both aspects, Qatar is guilty, but also it needs to be contextualized in the fact that, even the South African World Cup was tainted by allegations of corruption in the bidding process. You know, it's been seen as the commonality for all World Cups that have been given, that they're political decisions and not just based on admin. And also, you know, in relation to a human rights record, the World Cup was given to Russia despite, Russia's annexation of Crimea in 2014, despite the various assassinations carried out by, you know, the regime of Moscow, you know, including Sergei Skripal, Alexander Litvinenko, you know, that were known at the time. So, you know, there is, you know, it needs to be contextualized in the sense that this is not necessarily the exception but the norm.
Yeah, I think it's an important point that you make, that almost every World Cup that was awarded, there were allegations of corruption. I remember the one that South Africa did not get. I can't remember for which year. There was a New Zealand delegate, if I'm not mistaken, who swung his vote, and there was huge suspicion that money had exchanged hands.
Yes, yes. No, the 2006 World Cup, which was supposed to be given to South Africa, and South Africa had been, you know, when we're looking at the voting records and the voting, speculation before the vote, it seemed as if South Africa would have easily got the votes. And it was definitely a bought decision, which actually ended up giving the World Cup then to Germany, again, a Western country. And it's now known that, you know, the New Zealand delegate in South Africa, who swayed the votes so South Africa couldn't get out of the first round, was actually provided funds by agencies, you know, linked to the German World Cup. But
okay, so there's been a lot of cries that there's double standards here, there's hypocrisy here. I was just looking at social media earlier this morning. A BBC journalist criticized for wearing the armband, trying to highlight the cause of LGBTQI as a result of the Qatar World Cup, but then posing for pictures with Putin when Russia's got a similar policy in as far as the LGBTQI is concerned. Many are saying that the narrative changes when it's a non-white country that hosts the World Cup. How has the media been covering this overall?
I think that's the bigger issue, and the big issue of why, and narrative is very important, because we all get our news from media, even though citizen journalism has been on the increase. And the narrative has been, you know, in Qatar there's two big issues when we're talking. There's the LGBTQI stuff, and there's the migrant labor stuff. But we can see the double standards, because the migrant labor is actually the bigger issue, if you look at it objectively. Conditions are worse. Qatar is one of the few countries that has, I think, six times more immigrant or migrant labor than actual citizens. And some of the conditions are very squalid. I mean, we do need to note that they have improved over the past 5-10 years since the granting of the World Cup, which has been a good thing. But, you know, the double standard is shown in what the focus is on. That's the first part. It's focused only on the LGBTQI stuff. as opposed to the bigger issue, which is of migrant labor. It's not looking at the improvements. But also, as you're saying, there's the focus is exclusively on that and hasn't been on that in other, you know, major, what we call mega events in nation branding spaces, mega events that have occurred. So, you know, last year there was a Winter Olympics in China, and we all knew the UN has actually found, you know, the Chinese or accused the Chinese government of a genocide or ethnocide in Xinjiang, you know, with the Uyghurs. You know, the Russian World Cup in 2018, despite the annexation of Crimea and, again, ethnic cleansing of the Tatars in Crimea. And so, you know, there's this narrative, and it's now it's perpetuated by the media that, you know, when it becomes a World Cup that is not by Europeans, you know, there's always criticism, and there's unwarranted criticism, and it shapes narrative. In South Africa, it was the security situation, which was highly heightened because, obviously, you know, Westerners didn't want to have the World Cup in South Africa, didn't want to win the World Cup in South Africa. So, you know, the media coverage has been very, very, very one-sided, very unjustifiable, and in a sense, you know, it's similar to other issues. You know, when we're looking at how the Middle East, how, you know, anything in a sense non-European is covered, it's covered from a European lens. And that, you know, there's no criticism at all about, for example, what people aren't allowed to wear in France, Muslims, but criticism of, you know, Qatar human rights record. And that, in a sense, shapes the narrative and shapes how Europeans view the continent and view, you know, the region. And also, in a sense, you know, these stereotypes become, you know, reified and contributes to, you know, this great public support, for example, for the war on terror. And, you know, it's all linked up to coverage and to narrative shaping. And mega events such as these contribute vastly, at least the coverage of it, to how, you know, the general public. Because for the most part, general publics in these countries don't actually relate or don't have, you know, much interactions with non-European countries. And it's these events which, you know, are the only real avenues in a sense as to how they relate. And the media coverage shapes this relation. So
what's the best response then, Ibrahim?
I think, you know, the Qatari response has been quite interesting. You know, looking at the opening ceremony and the inclusivity, you know, that has been promoted. But I think, you know, what we're slowly seeing, especially with the expansion of, for example, BRICS, is this counter-hegemony that's starting to form. And for the first time, unlike, you know, during the Cold War, it was still two European countries. You know, the new hegemony, and we can be very critical of it, is the BRICS grouping. And so we're starting to see, in a sense, a decentralization and a de-Europeanization. And I think that's significant, that, you know, for the very first time, we're starting to see the Global South actually join, collaborate, and integrate as their own entity in opposition to the West, and not, you know, and this then, you know, we start creating this narrative and this counter narrative, which is able to sustain itself. And we're getting now, for example, different media agencies, you know, different news outlets from the Global South. And if you're looking at Global South coverage of the World Cup, it's very different. And I think that's, you know, that's probably the only way, is to, one, you know, create one's own media and one's own institutes, but also to ensure that, you know, Western, or at least fight for more inclusivity and tolerance within these Western agencies and institutes. And we're seeing this, for example, in news coverage, where, you know, very significant news outlets in recent years have Palestinian commentators, for example, being employed. And that, you know, there's a dual way in how you shape and change the narrative. And I think that's, you know, both of them have to be carried out simultaneously. We can't exclude the one.
All right, Ibrahim, shukran so much for your time. We'll talk again next week, inshallah.
Shukran for having me.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was this week's edition of the Media Lens with Ibrahim Deen.